Welcome to Drinking While Talking. We're your hosts. I'm Wade Sheeler.
I'm Jill Blake.
We cover everything from classic film to classic music with some forays into pop culture, lifestyle, and politics. Today, I'm enjoying a dark and stormy. That's my go-to drink. We've got some Gosling's dark rum and some ginger beer with a little bit of lime.
And I am drinking Jill juice with a side of municipal water on ice.
Now, is that a company or is that actually like the name of Atlanta's water service?
That's just what I've named our tap water. Oh. But I did run it through a Brita filter. So I'm only getting, I don't know, maybe 20% lead. But it keeps the mind agile, you know.
Now, you know, I know that New York City water is supposed to, like, when I've gone there, they say, oh my God, you don't need bottled water when you go to New York. You can drink it straight from the tap. And it is really good, clean tasting water. How does Atlanta's water rate?
It's fine. Technically, we're in the city of Brookhaven, which is in DeKalb County, which is getting into the really interesting layout of Atlanta City or Metro Atlanta, which I'm sure our listeners want to hear. But so we are actually on the DeKalb County water system. And so we're not getting, but it tastes fine. But it's weird because certain times of year, especially when we have crazy temperature changes, especially if it's really hot, sometimes you'll turn on the tap and you'll get a lot of sediment, which is always fun because what happens is in all the water reservoirs, when the temperature changes, all of that sediment from the bottom will come up to the top. And so occasionally you'll get a little, you know, brown water. You'll get a little, you know, about once or twice a year. Mm. But yeah. So usually
always
when
good to filter.
And
always
they tell us that's fine to drink.
Uh-huh.
I call bullshit on that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, we always filter our tap water. But don't do bottled water, kids. That's bad for the environment.
Yes. What about box water? That's the new thing.
Yeah, I know. But you know, if you look at the any like spring water you buy,
it's not.
And it'll say almost all of it comes from Tennessee.
Oh, really?
And let me tell you, you don't want to be drinking shit out of the state of Tennessee. Because you know it's probably some. One of them was Polk County, Tennessee. I've been to Polk County, Tennessee. Here's what it is: some dude with a water hose outside his trailer filling up bottles. I can promise you that.
God. So we are talking about the TCM Film Fest because it seems like two out of three of our podcasts we're talking about the TCM Film Festival. We just got back from it. Saw some great films, had some great experiences, and actually interviewed some people in line, people that we know. I met some, well, overall the festival, I met lots of people I didn't know, but I got to interview people that I didn't know. And a little later, we'll be playing some of those interviews.
This was the 10th annual. And now, I know we talked about this. You know, how many festivals is this for you now?
This was my sixth.
Your sixth. Okay. And so overall, how'd you like it? How was it?
I enjoyed it. I think I had more fun because I was interviewing people. It forced me to engage a lot more. I like to engage, but it actually gave me even more opportunities just to talk to people. I always think, oh, these are the films everybody's going to go to. But I would say almost everybody I talked to had different films that were their top pick to see. I thought that was interesting. Like, I would have never thought that almost everybody I talked to wanted to see the Dolly Sisters. I mean, that was like real high up on people's lists. I saw some really good stuff. I thought the festival was well presented, and I thought there were great great speakers before the events. So I had a really good time.
What was your favorite screening?
Escape from New York was the most enjoyable because of Kurt Russell and John Carpenter. Their intro was great. Kurt had a great story about it was his idea to wear the eye patch as Snake Plissken, and said that the moment he put it on, no one was up for it except for John Carpenter. He gave him the thumbs up. The studio wasn't, because they're like, hey, good money to see his blue eyes and his face, and we're losing a third of it.
That beautiful face.
Yeah.
What did I say about Kurt, Wade?
He said he can get it.
He can get it.
Jill was having a good time. That is something I'll take away. Jill had a great time at this festival.
I did. I had a great time.
I would say every screening, either before, during, or after, I would hear her either say about who we were watching, or I'd hear her amidst a conversation with somebody else. I don't know who they'd be talking about, and I'd just hear, he can still get it. He can get it.
Even dead people, I was like, he can get it.
He can get it right now, 6 feet under. Yeah, you were having a good time. But yeah, Kurt Russell was great, but he said once he put the eye patch on, he completely lost his equilibrium and realized, what did I get myself into?
So yeah, that was a mistake. Cool.
Yeah. So that, and I would say Merrily We Go to Hell, which was, you know, as we discussed earlier, was my first time, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, even though the politics and the sexual politics and gender politics were completely screwed up. I still just took a lot away from it, really enjoyed it. I liked how the tone shifted from, and that's, you know, yet another example of Frederick March playing drunk and mm-hmm. or a drunk. And I just really liked the way it shifted from, God, he's fun. They're fun together. They're having a good time, to, oh, this is where alcohol can get dangerous.
Yeah, it gets so serious. And Sylvia Sidney's so remarkable in that film. It's got to be, I mean, she had a hell of a career in the 30s, but it's got to be her, I think maybe her best performance, maybe next to, she's great in Dead End. And
I was just going to say, I love her in Dead End.
Yeah, she's great in Dead End, and she's great in Fury, too, with Spencer Tracy.
Yeah.
But this one's really, is definitely up there. It's a great performance.
What about you? What was your experience like?
I really had a great time. You know, this was my eighth festival, and my first year was 2012, so I've gone every year since. And you know, we talked about this on the last episode. I've done the festival different ways every year. And this year I kind of, the last 2 or 3 years, I've kind of had this more laid back approach. And again, that suited me this year, where, yeah, I might have 2 or 3 essentials that I wanted to see. And then I just kind of either deferred to who I was with, or just kind of went based on mood.
I got some great takeaways, again, just from you. It's like when you go to the festival with Jill, she's the belle of the ball.
Oh, my God.
You know everybody there. Like, I know people through social media, and, you know, Jill will introduce them just in conversation. But you must have known, like, 80% of the people I would just see there. You knew everybody. It was astounding. It really was. I don't know.
I think it's more of, in previous years, I've shown my ass so much that they know me, and then I have no choice but to say hi to them.
No, it's more than that. And it's not just that you don't have a choice. You are so happy to see all these people.
Yeah,
I will
true.
Say that. You're always so excited to see them, and they're always excited to see you. That's just what's really cool. It feels like I'm a tag along at somebody's 10th high school reunion, you know, like I'm the plus one.
I think you were a part of it. But see, now I think every year you meet more people.
It's true. It's
and
true.
Then you will become the beau of the ball.
No, it was just, it was great to see that people are excited. And Jill knows some people at TCM, man. I mean, she knows some folks. And it would be cool to go, I was just hanging with Charlie. We're just having a little conversation. Oh, wait, got to go talk to Scott McGee. Oh, look, there's Ben. I got to go hang with Ben. I'd be like, I'll just be over here.
I have one of those faces, you know, that you see it once and you go, God damn, what is that? I'm very
not
recognizable.
True.
Or if people don't know, they see me, and then the minute they hear, you know, like my Twitter handle, they go, oh,
yeah.
I know. And I'm like, oh, shit. You know, like, oh, yeah, I've seen your Twitter. Okay. I did get a few of those where I got, okay.
You're the one who speaks your mind. Oh.
Okay. Nice to meet you, you know.
No, when I get that, they go, Jill, hi, Biscuit Kitten. Oh, my God. And you go, and this is Wade Sheeler. I go, yeah, Samuel Dodsworth, Retroset. I'd have to, like, read my resume off to them. And they go, yeah, hi. So, Jill.
But I do, because this is a very kind of, you know, specialized niche gathering, you know, you have this concentration of people that are in the classic film Twitter world or whatever. And so there's occasionally people that I don't know that they're following me on Twitter or whatever, but I don't follow them, but they know who I am. And that's a little weird, but weird in that that's just how that world works now, that people recognize, you know, because they either saw me on Filmstruck or they have seen something I've tweeted or whatever, and they know my face, they know my name, they know what I've been. And so that's always a little, I guess it's nice because it's not like these are randos, like I'm out and about in Atlanta and like strangers are coming up to me. It's not like that at all. So this is definitely a concentration of people that are in that world, but it's still a little bizarre to kind of get that a little bit, but also cool too that it's a tight-knit community, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, but it's also you're starting to feel the first taste of celebrity.
Oh, shut up. I really had a good time. I would say I can't remember the count of movies I saw. It was like around 12 or 13, something like that.
I think
that.
I saw the exact same number. I think I saw 12 or 13.
Roughly, and that's with me being generous and counting the two I left early. I would say my favorites would be Roadhouse.
That's right. That was really good.
That was the Ida Lupino, Cornel Wilde, and which for some reason you and I have seen like back to back Cornel Wilde Nitrate prints.
Leave her to heaven in this.
And in both, I lean over to Wade and I was like, I just want to punch him in the face. He has like the most, I'm sure he was a nice guy. I just want to punch him right in the face.
He's one of those actors, though. I feel like he got way more opportunities than he deserved.
Yeah. What
he
did
just
you,
looks like
what
a Ken doll.
Yeah, Ken doll is what you said. You know,
he just looks like a 1940s Ken doll.
I just want to put him on a grill and melt the plastic.
Melt the plastic.
So if there's any Cornel
Shove
Wilde.
Shove an M80 up his ass.
Yes. He just has that fate. It's like he's totally bewildered. Like he doesn't even know. It's like he's like, I don't know why I'm here.
That's a perfect way of putting it.
Like
he is
bewildered and almost his eyes are vacant.
Yes.
You know, like there's nothing there. I mean, again, if there's any like descendants of Cornel Wilde listening to this, my apologies. I don't mean to offend. I'm sure he was a great dude. So I loved that screening. That movie was fucking bonkers in every good way. Ida was fantastic. She just stole every scene she was in. And of course I loved Merrily We Go to Hell, which was a new digital restoration. I thought it looked great. Carrie Beecham introduced that, and she's, I love seeing a morning screening with Carrie. Her stuff is great. And then I went to the two Craig Barron and Ben Burt presentations. They were both fantastic. The first one was Raiders, which, you know, as many times as I've seen that, it was still really fun to see that with their conversation beforehand, because, you know, you're listening for, you know, all the.
Yeah, that was fascinating.
I thought it was great because they talked about all the different, you know, inspiration for the and the source material for a lot of the sounds that Ben Burt used. And then they did that Tarzan and His Mate, which I had never seen that movie all the way through. Just, you know, snippets. And that was a great screening, appreciative audience. And as problematic as that movie is, it was a lot
of fun.
What's
problematic about it? I haven't seen Tarzan and His Mate for a long time.
I mean, just the native, you know.
Oh, of course.
Yeah,
yeah,
I mean,
right.
It's a little dicey on that. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, and especially coupled with their presentation, because Ben Burt went into a whole like Zapruder film, like, you know, that he's been obsessed with the source of the Tarzan yell. But that was great. And then I would say after that, yeah, it was just a great festival because I saw, you know, we went to the Nashville screening. That was great. And Jeff Goldblum was, man, he can get it. Cold Turkey, you and I went to go see Cold Turkey. Yeah. That was great. Closed out the festival with Godfather Part Two, which was great. And I went to go see Star Wars. And, you know, I've seen that movie a gajillion times. This was the 97 bastardized edit that is the only one that's legally in circulation. And I really didn't want to see it because that is a movie that the original 1977 release used matte painting, used models. So everything is to scale, but it's real.
Yeah.
It's real. And when he went in and made all of the deleted scenes that he added in, fine. I have no problem with that. You know, there's a couple of those little moments, fine. But the CG that was cutting edge in 1997 is not cutting edge anymore. And even in 1997, when I saw those in the theater, it pulled you out of the film because everything else is like, you know, I can touch. This is, looks real because it was made out of real materials. And then you've got this, you know, whatever the hell bullshit CG critter running around. But now even more so, the CG is so dated that it pulls you out even more. And that was the first time I had seen the 97 cut since 97, because I swore I would never. But I had fun watching it because I sat next to your wife and she was cracking me up. Yeah. She was having like the time of her damn life, like she clapping. She was like cheering the millennials, like she'd never seen it before. But she was like on cue, like all the moments. She's like, yeah, woo! It was like, so I could totally get past. I mean, I was such in a shitty mood because I ended up at this movie and because I wanted to like bone Kurt Russell and. But Karen made it all worthwhile. That's all I'm saying. Bless her.
Yeah, she gets, man, you know, she's great when it's a movie that calls for cheers and laughs. And she will get pissed at the audience if they're not cheering, too.
Oh, you know? She was really trying to, like, she's like that person at a sporting event that's, like, trying to, like, get the wave to start or, like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like generate a clap. Like, that's yeah. Karen.
It
like,
is.
She
it
needs, is. Like... She needs to come along with me to every yeah. like event that I go to, you know.
She's funny too when you're watching previews, and if a preview's coming up of a big film, like if it's previews of a, you know, she loves a lot of big budget blockbuster films. So if it'll be a preview for the upcoming Bond, you know, she'll go, "Yeah!" And then when it's not over, she'll go, "Come on, people."
So, yeah, that's yeah, no. So if you ever get a chance to watch a movie with Karen Sheeler, you should take it because it's a lot of fun.
It is.
Yeah. So that eased. I was quite disgruntled. And I mean, I probably could have gotten into Escape from New York. Mm-hmm. But the line was just so long, and
yeah,
I knew
that was packed. To
and
capacity.
I knew standby people that got in, so we probably would have gotten in.
Oh.
I think like 5 or 10 standbys got in, maybe.
It's
one of those things where I looked at the cue cards, and they were already in the 300s.
Yeah, for and it seats like 400, right?
And seats 400, and that didn't include the spotlight in VIP.
Right.
And see, those people can come in at the last minute and fill. And, you know, if we had waited and tried to get into that and we didn't get in, we would have missed the next block completely.
Yeah.
So we just had to make a decision. And, yep. You know. Oh, well, that's part of it.
I felt like there are good things about the festival. There are bad things about the festival. And I just put the ugly, the good, bad, and the ugly. The ugly was, poor you. You
yeah.
were fighting a horrible cold. You
horrible.
Were, you kept rallying, though. You were like, it's not going to get me down. It's not going to get me down. But then there were points where you were just like, ugh.
That felt like shit, pretty much.
Yeah.
Until this past Monday.
Ugh, It was bad.
Usually I get sick at the end of it. I mean, there's been years.
And that's what I did.
Yeah, there's been years that, like, I'll be going into the closing night party and I'll start to feel not great, which might be that I caught something at the first part of the festival. Maybe I got something on the plane out. You know, but usually if I get anything, it's like con crud, you know, for all you that go to like conventions or whatever, you're going to get sick at the end of this shit, you know?
Yeah.
And so this time though, I was sick the whole time. And, but you know, I was committed and pushed it to the limit.
Let's talk about this is our first, I don't know if they've done this before. I don't think they have, but this was the launch year of having TCM ambassadors, and
that's
we were
right.
both TCM ambassadors, which was a lot of fun. We got to, I don't know, we got to tweet and social media about it and got to interact a lot more with other people of our ilk. And not that it was interesting to say, what do we actually do as TCM ambassadors? I know we got to go to a meeting where they kind of explained to us what we were doing, which wasn't much different than what we already do. We already tweet and post about what we're doing, but some of the newly minted ambassadors were curious, what do we tell people when they ask us where a screening is? And I don't think I was ever asked one question. Of course, you know, when people see me coming, they generally don't ask questions, but did you get hit up a lot with...
No!
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, they gave us red lanyards, you know, like they had different colored lanyards this year. So they had like the usual black lanyard with, you know, TCM Film Festival on it for, you know, most of the pass holders. And then they had a special lanyard for the attendees who were 10 timers who've been to all 10 festivals. And then they had a special lanyard for the TCM ambassadors. And I think, which was really cool, but, and there was some, you know, it will be noticed. People will ask. I didn't get any questions on it. But again, people probably see me and go, ooh, you know, what's up with her? We'll stay away from her. They've done similar programs in the past. I think 2 years of the festival, they did like this social media producer program, but I don't think that really panned out the way they wanted it to. So this was kind of an offshoot of that idea. And I think, you know, I mean, again, I'm not sitting at TCM looking at the data on this, but, you know, I think that based on what they told us afterwards, I think the coverage was really nice.
My feed was just constantly filled with all of these ambassadors and non-ambassadors just posting about hashtag TCMFF. And I wonder what the numbers were for that hashtag, how it rated, but it seemed like a lot of people were posting about it.
I mean, it was enough that I had non-festival attendees in my timeline saying that they were muting the hashtag. So,
really?
You know,
yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Bastards.
You know, just, you know, I get it. You know, if you're not there.
You have engaging conversations with the people you are posting with. My people are just like, oh, there goes Wade again.
I thought the ambassador program was pretty cool, and the requirements were really none, you know, other than, you know, just try to chronicle as much as you can over the weekend. But it was, we were left to do pretty much whatever
free
we
reign.
Wanted to do, you know, other than, you know, no, you know, vulgarities, which was really difficult for me.
It was hard for you. I did break down at one point and post a picture of a chocolate churro with the innards dripping out that I just could not help. It was the most phallic thing I'd seen in a while.
I encouraged you to. It's like I couldn't help. Like when I'm presented with an opportunity to be completely disgusting, I can't pass it up. And so I encouraged you. Other than when you talked about Kurt Russell, who else did you see that you were pretty happy with?
This may surprise some. I found the conversation with Burt Bacharach before Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid was really fascinating, because he talked about he was still, as a film composer, still kind of in his infancy. The only film he had scored before this was What's New, Pussycat.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And he talked about just the difference in scoring a film versus writing songs. And this film in particular, this film somewhat similar to, say, The Graduate, where The Graduate has a very specific sound because the entire film is scored by Simon and Garfunkel. And this, too, there are major breaks in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid where it's like, and now we're going to do what would be the 1969 equivalent of a music video.
Yeah.
You know,
so. Raindrops keep falling. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that whole sequence is like, what the hell just happened?
Exactly. And I think that's a very polarizing thing about that film is that right at the point where you get going, there is this montage, this musical scene with Paul Newman and Catherine Ross. I'm sure everybody's seen it, so I don't have to describe it, riding the bicycle and getting chased by a bull. And it's all the Raindrops Falling on My Head, which is so anachronistic to the period that the film is set in. But it was kind of discussed how this film, much like Bonnie and Clyde 2 years earlier, was, even though this was a Western, it very much had the 1969 rebellious youth tendencies to it, and that's kind of what it was going for. So Raindrops for that period is equals the period.
It's almost groundbreaking, too, for the time to do this, because you could isolate that out as a music video. And it actually reminds me of the Can't Buy Me Love sequence in A Hard Day's Night.
Good point.
Which would have come out
64. Five years earlier. Yeah.
So, and that, you know, I mean, that there's lots of, you know, performances in that film, but that particular sequence is
it plays like a
music video. And that's, and actually a lot of people will say that that's the first music video.
Yeah, I would totally agree. It definitely, like everything about the show, The Monkees, is inspired by the Can't Buy Me Love portion of Hard Day's Night. And then there's also two other sequences that break format and just, we're going to have a music montage. They go, the three of them, Paul Newman, Robert Redford, and Catherine Ross, they escape to Bolivia, and there's a whole music video done with stills in a montage format of them traveling south of the border.
I love that, too. I love it.
Yeah, there's that. And then there's one more where they are starting up their career of bank robberies, and it's all done to a music sequence. And that's what Burt Bacharach talked about, was just how it was not just him, but George Roy Hill made this decision as the director that this is what we're going to do. We're going to break format, and we're just going to go for it. And the studio executives were livid. They wanted to cut all three of those out, and George Roy Hill was like, over my dead body. And to an arguable result, I think it totally works for me because I love that film. You know, when you have those films that you love that you know sometimes there are elements of it that don't stand up to criticism, I would totally say you're probably right with that film, but I don't care because I just love that film start to finish. But I know there was a period, because I've seen that film all my life, maybe in the 90s, when people would start laughing embarrassingly in the theater when those moments come on. And now I think we've gone back again where people don't seem to mind it. People enjoy it.
I always felt like that movie just kind of took the form. I mean, it took the format of the Western and of really any major Hollywood film and just said, fuck it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I love about it.
Yeah.
So that sounds like that was fun.
It was really fun. The audience was really into it. Shall we talk about some of the bad? I know
you
don't have to go too deep into it, but I know the cue cards, the number system, that always seems to be a trial by fire way of doing things. And this year it just didn't seem to work out too well.
You know, I mean, the cue card system, I know they use this at all kinds of festivals. I mean, those exact little cards. I mean, that's kind of how that works. And so in the line management has always been a problem. And I would say in the last year and the year before, they had finally seemed to work the kinks out and really had, because it used to, you would get your cue card and you would get in line and they wouldn't tell you when to be back. So you just have to stand there in the line an hour, 90 minutes before a thing, and you have to go to the bathroom or whatever. So you'd have somebody hold your spot in line, and then everybody would yell at you when you'd come back. There was a lot of confusion, and they finally got down to where you would go get your place in line. They would work their way down the line and hand you your cue card with, and for all that you know, or all of you that don't go to this, is it's just a little piece of paper that's color coded for the venue you're at, and you get the cue card, and then they say, all right, be back in line at, you know, 2 o'clock. So usually you'll have 30 minutes to go. You can go to the bathroom, you can go grab a bite to eat, and then come and line back up. Well, this year, instead of having one of the festival workers walk down the line and issue out the cue cards as they come down, what they were having us do is they had one person handing out cue cards at the front of the line. So what happened was they were having the whole line walk all the way through to get the cards and telling us when to come back, but didn't give us approximation on where in the line to go stand. It's like when you fly Southwest, you know, they put up those, you know, little markers.
One through 50, 75.
Exactly. Yeah. And so everybody is walking. And so when you've got a venue that, especially at the multiplex where there's not a ton of space and they can only fit so many people in one segment of the line before they have to start moving people out, what happens is you have this huge rush of people that are coming to get their cue cards. There's confusion about where they're passing out the cue cards. And then there's like this huge wave of people coming out. And then when it comes time to get back in line, there's a huge wave all trying to cram in this teensy spot, and where they probably should have put up markers along the line. Also, you shouldn't have to get out of line if you don't want to. And so they were essentially forcing people to line up, get out of line, and then come back in. I also noticed that the, and I don't know if you noticed this too, almost every screening I went to was running late.
Yeah.
And it happens usually so bad.
At, like every day, usually about three quarters of the way through the day, things start falling behind because certain presenters or discussions run long. But this seemed like from the very first screening.
Every single one.
Yeah.
I mean, all the ones I went to. I mean, the worst one was Sleeping Beauty. And that was Saturday. It was like a noon screening or something like that. And they did not seat us in the theater until noon. Like they didn't.
And what time was it supposed to start?
It was like at noon. Whatever time. They basically did not open the doors until a couple minutes before it was supposed to start. And there was a conversation with two of the animators from the film. And so because of that, in order to make it to the Raiders screening, we had to leave. We knew we were going to have to leave Sleeping Beauty early, but we thought maybe like 15 minutes early. But instead, we didn't even make it through like 20 minutes of the film. So that was a little disappointing. And so I don't know if it's because the screening prior to ran over, but it was like, we're looking at, I mean, because usually they let you in 15, 20 minutes early before it's due to start, just so that they can start it on time. And I found that was really, and I passed this on to, you know, a couple TCM folks that I saw who asked me how it was going, and they and the line management and all that is, I believe, done through a separate company that they contract with, because they're not TCM employees that are running.
Yeah,
that.
They're totally separate. It's like a festival company that does
right.
They're not. I used to think they were volunteers, but as we've talked and as I learned over the years, they are people who are paid. They're hired. They're working to work the festival. They're just so clueless, some of them. And they always send you in the wrong direction.
Always.
They give you misinformation. And you spend half your time in line going, so am I in the right place? So were mm-hmm. they telling you to go over here? Yeah, this person told me to go stand in the street. They had the standby line 3 blocks away facing, you know, a liquor store. I mean, it's and sometimes it's the people that are actually employees of the TCL, and it's sometimes it's people that are employees of the festival organizers, but they just don't know what's going on.
No,
and I would rather they say I don't know than just go, oh yeah, you're going to go over here, and then they're totally wrong.
And that's where a good house manager would come into play, you know, to keep them informed, because there was like, you know, Sean and I went up to one of the screenings and we're like, where are the cue cards? And they're like, well, they've got them over there. So we walk over there and they go, no, 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 they've got them over there. And then we walk over there. And then finally I just turned and threw my hands up and I went, where are the goddamn cue cards? Like, just come on, you know?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, did you not go way across the street and down La Brea? You know, you got to walk 14 miles. But
you'll see a van.
Yeah.
No license plates.
It's fine. It's totally legit. It's above board. Just knock three times. When we were in line for Raiders, we had a pretty good position.
Mm-hmm.
And they have like a little bit, they have a small group of people waiting in the courtyard, and then they have everybody else, you know, lining up the steps going into the shopping center, which fine. Okay.
Yeah.
But they didn't have anybody managing the line as it came into the courtyard. So there was this like bottleneck effect going on.
Yeah.
So you had this huge, and then we get in and then they started yelling at us because we were out of order. They're like, you're in the wrong place. And I'm like, well, you know, Jesus Christ, dude, like you literally have nobody managing the lines. So I think that's part of it is, I think they had enough staff, but they just didn't place their staff because there should have been staff members set up all the way
along the line.
Especially
those breaks, breaks in the line.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it just, you know, in parts, that aspect of it was a hot mess. In terms of the programming was fantastic. Oh. Always. The special guests were great.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely no complaints on the TCM side of things. It's just the other was not done well at all.
I think the TBAs they did, you know, it's the to be announced that they pick and they fill in the slots on the last day based on the popularity of some screenings. They pick some great ones because, you know, we talked beforehand about, you know, the love-hate relationship with pre-coders, you know, those are some of the most sought-after seats, and the movies are so good and rarely seen, but a lot of people miss out on them. And so when I would talk to people at the festival, they'd say, oh, I wish I had seen Merrily We Go to Hell. I wish I'd seen Roadhouse. And you're like, well, you know, wait. And sure enough, those are the ones that showed up as the to be announced. And I think that's just a great way of doing it.
Absolutely. You
know? Yeah.
And they, I think sometimes they'll have... I mean, I'm sure that there are some films that it's a one-time show. You know, they only have the rights to exhibit it once.
Right, right.
So I'm sure they're and you know, again, they're not gonna, even if say Steel Magnolias sells out, they're not gonna play that one again. It's almost always gonna be those screenings that are in the multiplex.
Yeah.
So I think they have kind of a narrowed down of what they'll screen again, but it's always based on the turnout. And then they actually listen. They ask and they listen. So if you guys don't know who the TCM staffers look like, they roam around the lines. This is why you got to be careful about your bitching, people, because if you don't know who they are, there are TCM staffers at every venue and from every department there at the network, and they listen, they hear things, and they usually will ask. And I was asked, actually Scott McGee had asked me at the, when we went to go see, Santo and the Evil Brain, he said, how was the turnout for, Merrily? And I said, it was packed. And he was like, okay, well we're leaning toward putting that as a TBA. So, you know, they kind of, I think they have an idea, but then on the fly kind of gauge it. And some of it, I don't think is an exact, they just kind of listen to what people want to see. They look, I don't know if they take social into account, and I think some of it's just gut on what they decide to run. But those TBAs are great.
Let's talk about Santo and the Evil Brain.
Mm.
we heard tell, and this is how it's fun. It is. You just start talking to people, go, I heard. So we heard that Scott McGee was going to do something special at the Santo versus the Evil Brain screening, which was the midnight screening about, you know, starring a luchadore. And sure enough, Milly Dicherco, who, hey, let's take a quick moment to say how amazing she did.
Man, she's the Milly best.
She announced several films. She was so cool. She was so fun. She knows how to grab hold of kind of the zeitgeist of the festival. And, you know, she's as excited as a fan is. Just the whole time she was presenting this film, she had Scott McGee as a luchador just standing menacingly next to her.
Yeah, it was great. There wasn't a...
I was really waiting for him to, you know, give the smackdown on somebody.
No.
Because he looked so menacing.
But it was great. I mean, and he was wearing like a blazer.
Yeah.
You know, and
I was looking for the whole full body stocking. I was hoping he was going
to
pull that.
I was hoping he was going to, Scott, if you're listening to this, which, you know, you probably aren't, but I was a little disappointed. You did not go all the way with that, with the full outfit. That would have been nice. You know,
I guess he gave you some insider. He's like, you got to stick around for the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And the first 10 minutes of that film did not disappoint. It was one of the most unintentionally, which is always the best when something's unintentional, but it was the most unintentionally bizarre 10 minutes of a movie I think I've ever sat through. It was shot in Cuba, right? Like these first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You almost get 10 minutes of a travelogue of Cuba, which was fascinating for the period. Like a camera that pans 360, maybe four times nonstop during the credits. And then the credits are over and then the music just stops. And then you've just got the scratching, popping of a soundtrack, and then you get cars driving forever.
Like, forever. It's like we are. Look, here's the deal. We are going to make the most out of being in Cuba. So we are just going to shoot a shitload of footage. We don't have anyone to edit. So this is
it's just raw footage.
It's like, raw, real time footage.
It's almost like I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to drive to the grocery store. Now, the grocery store is 20 minutes away.
So you are going
to have a tracking shot nonstop of me going to the grocery store. It was amazing. You had a pretty well executed car to car shot that went for 20 minutes. And the music would end. It was like they do a needle drop of a song and the song would begin, middle, it would end. Nah. And then it would just continue driving.
It was just like, and it'd be, and it would end without fanfare. It's just like the song's over. Done. There was no fade out. You know, it was the song's over, and
not
then
even
it's just
a voiceover. Nothing. Yeah,
nothing. Just quiet. Yeah. And they had the. I will say that I can't remember the guy who was there was like part of the restoration, I believe.
He was kind of the money guy, I think, the restoration.
And remember, granddaughter, right?
Yeah.
She was the
filmmaker.
Right. And what we discovered at this screening was that Nicholas Winding Refn has, like, funded a lot of these Luchadori movies. Like, he's got a thing for it. And so he was on, he and that other, the guy who was there, they were on, you know, credited with the restoration of this. Yeah. But the granddaughter, you know, she didn't get to talk as much as she wanted to because, I mean, it's a late screening and they got to get us out of there. But yeah. She gave all of us permission to, like, openly mock this film.
Yeah, that was great. She's like, and they said these films were not made to sit quietly and be respectful. They wanted you, like pre-Rocky Horror, they wanted you to yell at the screen and to laugh and clap. And it was totally that. It was totally worth enjoying this moment. So yeah, so it was a total fun event.
For the 30 minutes we were there.
Yeah, then we had to get out.
And then Wade, I mean, like we were laughing a lot, but also I was still pretty sick because this was the Friday night and Wade's tired. He's got a drive ahead of him and he leans over to me and he's like, we can go whenever you want to go. But I was like, I was waiting for him to, like,
for you.
I wanted to go. You were waiting for me. I was waiting for you.
That's so funny. Isn't that perfect? It's always like, I love when friends give friends the permission. We can go at any time. Like, we've reached the point where I'm good. Another, interpret it to say, let's get the fuck out of here.
See, and maybe we'll get to the point, Wade, where I just give you a look, and then you know. Yeah. Like,
so but we were pretty much laughing that whole time.
It was pretty good. Was
really hilarious.
Yeah.
All right, so let's intro some of these interviews. We stood in line and interviewed some people. I got to speak with Jeremy Carr. He is one of the writers for our site, The Retroset. I'd never met him in person. And we were both at the Legion Theater for the first time. We were there to see some Republic shorts. And it was just great to see him. And he, one of his, he was excited about was Merrily We Go to Hell.
That's where I met him, was at that. And I only got to talk to him just for like 5 minutes before that screening started. But I met him there finally, you know.
Yeah. And he had a great story you'll hear about how he discovered the festival. I asked him if he was going to see Escape from New York, and he was not. He was seeing something else, but he had this tote bag that had Escape from New York on it, and he got an autograph.
Like at the festival he got an autograph?
No, he'd gotten it at a previous screening.
Okay.
So he was like, I don't need to see it because, and he showed me this, and I was like, oh my God,
you're
this
like,
is amazing.
I want to steal this, beat you, leave you for dead in this alley, and then take this tote bag.
So he had my props. It's like, so okay, you're allowed to miss the screening now for
I'm
that.
Wondering, did Jeremy say that Kurt can get it?
He didn't. I probably told him that you said that, and he did not agree nor disagree with me.
Yeah, all right.
So let's listen to that. All right, so I'm here with Jeremy Carr. Jeremy is one of our premier writers on theretroset.com, and found him here at the festival, where you find all people who really care about good film. So, Jeremy, what have you seen so far?
Last night started with Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, ended with Bachelor and the Bobby Soxer, and just got out of Merrily We Go to Hell.
So, had you seen any, all of these? Like, how many had you seen before?
Gentlemen Prefer Blondes I'd seen. That was the only one. That and Broadway Danny Rose Next are the only repeat shows for me. Everything else is brand new.
All right. So, what did you think of Bachelor and Bobby Soxer?
I thought it was one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. My wife was with me, and the build-up, the intro, made it sound a little bit more scandalous than it really was. We thought it was just innocent fun. Really enjoyed it.
I love that film. Just the way he and Myrna Loy and Shirley Temple play off each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
I thought it was one of the best Cary Grant performances, just physical performances, his facial expressions and the sort of looks, the double and triple takes, and fantastic. Yeah.
You know, we all know he does comedy well, but this is one where you really get to see him show off his comedy chops. I love the scene where he and Shirley they're both talking like hepcats from the period. That's my favorite scene.
Right, I really liked it toward the end too, when they're at the dinner, and it's just one person after another keeps entering frame, and this one person has
filling
a
the table.
Party. It's
like
it's fantastic timing. Yeah.
What about Rudy Valley? Like, have you seen him do anything? Like, I think he plays his character well.
He did, and if I've seen him in anything, I didn't know it, but I thought he did a fine job. Definitely got into the tone of the character, that sort of adolescent kind of tone. It was good.
Totally. And so we both just saw Merrily We Go to Hell. We were talking a little bit. You said mixed reaction to it. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I thought the performances were great, and the direction, the writing, everything was good, except I just thought that maybe a sign of the times, he kind of got away with more than he should have, and I was kind of cheering for her to, turn the tables all the way, but they sort of rein things in a little bit at the end, and I was a little disappointed by that.
And I thought that, but I did think that for that period, she got to show a woman being individual and strong about it. You know, like, I thought it really maturely for the period handled what it's like to have addiction and what it's like to be a codependent person who kind of helps that behavior, or decides not to, like when she opens the door and he's like, keep it closed. That's such an alcoholic thing to do. I mean, what did you think?
I did think that, for about 15, 20 minutes, she really rebelled against, the standard. But the alcoholism, I thought, was really surprising. It was treated so comical and light to start, and then he gets deeper and deeper, and like, this isn't funny anymore. This has really turned something terrible. But it was interesting. Just maybe it wasn't as risque now as I would have liked to have seen it.
Right. Have you seen a lot of pre-codes or some that you would consider pre-code?
Yeah, a lot of them here, mm-hmm. And I try to catch them when they're on TCM. You can usually tell by the runtime,
Like 62 minutes,
exactly.
Or something.
Yeah, so I try to catch them when I can,
But yeah, I thought in terms of pre-codes go, it was, you know, for those hot button things you look for, it was kind of mild on that. But still, I think it was the advanced idea of a modern husband and wife both dating or trying to, that was kind of ahead of its time.
Right. I thought that it was just a throwaway line, but the, you know, did you hear about the depression? And they just laugh it off. I thought that was... that was pretty prescient, too.
That was hardcore.
Throw that in there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder how many audiences at the time really appreciated yeah. a comment like that.
They were like, screw you!
Right.
And so now we're at the Republic serials, and we're at the Legion at Post 43. What do you think of this space?
It's nice. It was a little bit of a hike, but it only didn't take too long to get up here, but it looks really nice. I'm anxious to see the actual auditorium.
Yeah, it's supposed to be beautiful. I was here years and years ago to see a play, actually, and I am really excited to see how what they've done to it. But it's a great spot, even though it is a hike, to have
screenings. Yeah, it's a great location. It's nice, and it's closer than, I guess, like the Cinerama Dome. So, you know, it's another venue that's not bad.
And so have you, what is your knowledge or experience with any of the serials of the period?
It's, you know, pretty much limited. I mean, that's why I kind of wanted to go here to see a clip show to sort of get a precursor. I mean, I know about, you know, a lot of the Poverty Row Studios, Monogram, and that sort of stuff, but not really well-versed in any specific titles. So I just want to kind of see the best of what they had to offer here.
Yeah, I love these little programs because you can't see them anywhere else.
Yeah, I missed the one. I'm not going to be able to make to the Fox an appreciation one.
Right.
So I wanted to get at least one clip program in.
Yeah, I try not to see films I've seen 100 times, although sometimes I'm a wuss and I have to because I'm seeing it with an audience. Like, I'm really looking forward to seeing Escape from New York because Kurt Russell and John Carpenter are going to be there. Oh, look at that.
Yeah, actually, I'm not going because I actually just rewatched Escape from New York not too long ago, and I met John Carpenter when he came
to Phoenix to perform.
So I'm like, I'm going to reluctantly pass on that one.
But you had a pretty once-in-a-lifetime experience already.
Yeah, so I got to meet him and talk with him, and I am a huge, huge John Carpenter fan, so it is sad that I have to not miss it, never have to miss
but
it.
Still, yeah. But still, yeah. You have your priorities sometimes.
Right.
And how many festivals is this for you?
This is the seventh full
festival. Wow.
I was here the third year, but we just happened to be in town for it. And we just caught How the West Was Won, and that's how I found out about it. And I've been coming ever since.
Wait, you happened to be here and you've
been? Yeah, my wife and my family were here on vacation, and I don't even know how we caught word of How the West Was Won at the Cinerama Dome. And, you know, they had the three-strip process and all that sort of thing. And so we went there and, like, what's this festival all about? And that's how we found out. And
that's amazing.
We've just been coming back ever since.
Especially for, like, a big film fan like yourself to just stumble upon it. I would think that would be like Nirvana to stumble across something like this.
And it has been ever since. I mean, it's definitely been the highlight of the year because we do not get movies like this in Phoenix at all. So it's a rare opportunity.
Now, would that be a mission of yours in Phoenix, is to open your own revival house?
Yeah.
I feel like that's every film lover's dream who lives in not a huge metropolis. Well, Phoenix is pretty damn big, but not a lot of classic film lovers, I don't think.
Yeah, no. The closest we've got is a theater in Tucson, which is still an hour and a half away. And yeah, I'd love to open up a theater that shows this stuff. And I did, you know, I presented a classic films at, like, libraries and at the college where I teach and stuff. And so, but nothing for the public like this. That'd be great.
We love having you as a writer on the Retro Set. You do awesome, awesome stuff. I'm sorry we don't send you more DVDs.
No, I appreciate it. It's been great.
As I say, I have a satchel here for you when you're not having to climb up and down hills, I can pass on to you. But thanks for being here, and look forward to seeing more films.
All right, absolutely. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Talk to my good friend Karen Burroughs Hansberry. Karen runs the Dark Pages film noir newspaper, and then she's a blogger as well. And so we met up with her in the lobby of the Roosevelt. I guess it was Thursday. Of the festival.
It was the first day.
We had a really nice chat with her. You got to meet her, which was great. And
her daughter.
And her daughter. And she really hadn't gone to anything yet other than, you know, like a presentation. So she kind of talks a little bit about that, which is great.
Hey, so Wade and I are in the lobby of the Roosevelt, and we've run into our very good friend Karen Burroughs Hansberry, who is the Dark Pages on Twitter, and she runs the blog Shadows and Satin, and she has a film noir newsletter called the Dark Pages. And so, hey, Karen, how are you?
Hey, Jill, how are you? I'm sorry about my voice.
Well, I've got a fucked up voice, too. So, are you having a good festival?
I'm having a great festival. It's, you know, every year is the best one yet. And this is the best one yet.
And how many have you been to?
This is my seventh festival.
That's right. So this is my eighth, and your first year was 2013, right?
Right. That's right.
Okay. And that's when we met.
That's right.
And we met in a screening, and it was the screening of Alan Arkin.
No. I think we met before.
Mildred Pierce.
Right.
It was Mildred Pierce.
Yes.
That's right. That's right.
And I saw you. You were like two rows behind.
Acting a fool.
Yes. And I'm like, that's Jill.
And
oh
I was
my
like,
God.
What? Yeah, that was a good
that
moment.
That was the best.
I remember it.
It was the best.
Yeah. So, what have you seen so far?
I've only seen one movie, Merrily We Go to Hell, starring Frederick March and Sylvia Sidney, which I had seen before, but it was awesome. I've only seen it once, and it was even better than I remembered. So much going on in that movie.
And that was a beautiful digital restoration, too. It's the best I've ever seen it.
It was beautiful. It was a great restoration. Great copy.
And then you went to a special presentation today, is that right?
I did. It was The Descendants. It was the children of Cary Grant, Ruby Dee and Ossie Davis, and Charlton Heston.
Did you enjoy that?
It was wonderful. It was moderated by Ileana Douglas. And she's a great interviewer, great at keeping the conversation going. And all three of them were really awesome with providing some insights into what it was like growing up with their parents. It was really, really something. I'm so glad I went.
So what else are you going to see this weekend? Like what's your number one can't miss for the whole weekend?
Probably, I'm going to say Do the Right Thing. But then again, it might be Nashville. They're both can't misses. So I got a double can't miss situation going on.
We'll allow that.
Thank you.
I'm going to be at Nashville as well. Keith Carradine, hottest Carradine brother.
What do you want from life? I don't know. Yeah,
all right.
It's gonna be great.
Cool. So, and where are you from, Karen?
I'm from Chicago, Illinois.
Woo!
Indy City.
It's a great town.
Next to LA with the wind. It's ridiculous right now. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Karen.
I really appreciate it.
Thank
you.
And we're going to get a drink.
Yes,
yay.
We are. Let's go.
I got to interview Jackie at the Egyptian. We had a fun conversation. She's in love with Rod Taylor. It's always fun to talk to different film lovers and find out who their crush is because it's always surprising. I never see it coming. But I will say, again, I referenced something that I didn't visualize for you that you'll hear in the interview. She created these, Jill and I were calling them dusters, but they're these body length, they're cool. And for being a guy who does not know how to talk fashion, I don't know how to describe it. It's a very thin, almost like very long.
It's like a cardigan, like a full length cardigan.
Yeah. But she's got printed on them all of her male crushes. So you have Gary Cooper and Cary Grant and Rod Taylor all over this thing. And it was just, I was very impressed.
It was fun.
So I'm here in the courtyard of the Egyptian with Jackie. Jackie, what's your website? What's your Twitter handle?
Thank you. That's a little better. Jaxbra on Twitter.
And how many festivals have you been to?
This is my seventh.
Seventh festival. What are you most looking forward to seeing or have you already seen your most looking forward to film?
Okay, well, I originally was really looking forward to seeing The Clock because I hadn't seen it on the big screen, and it is my favorite Judy Garland movie. But unfortunately, it was the same time as the footprint ceremony. So I did the footprint ceremony, and now I'm at my second favorite one, which is Roadhouse.
Oh, excellent. You've seen Roadhouse?
I think once or twice, yes, which makes it good because it's like seeing it for the first time.
Right, very true, very true. So after tonight, you've seen your two most important screenings are over. What are you looking forward to the next 2 days? Anything?
I'm really bad at knowing all of the schedule because I kind of do it in the morning while I'm having breakfast.
Smart.
So I kind of go, and then depending on what I feel like, I see what I'm feeling like. If I feel like food, then I have food.
Yeah, what's a good, what would be a good tip that you would have for somebody coming to the festival that you've learned over the seven times?
Seven. I think my tip would be to don't get wrapped up into having to watch, you know, every single film that you want to see. Don't get wrapped up, I have to see 12 or 14 films. Go and do what you want to do while you get here. You know, look at the schedule, decide what you want to see, and then
while your day out.
And then while you're here, say, okay, let's see what I want to do today. And then, you know, you're going to see so many friends from online that you don't ever get a chance to see.
Right.
So sometimes hanging with friends is the better part of the festival. So.
Now you're from Chicago.
I'm from New Jersey.
You're from New Jersey.
Close.
You met Jill in Chicago.
I flew out to Chicago. Yeah,
got it.
Just for that.
Got it. So how often do you get to do anything classic film related, or is this the one shot a year?
This is pretty much what I do. There are other things that I could do, like in New York, but, you know, New York is 45 minutes away to, you know, an hour and a half depends on, you know, traffic and stuff. And let's face it, I'm lazy. So I'd rather fly out to California and spend a week. So, yeah, this is the biggest classic film-related thing that I do.
Now, describe your duster, your outerwear, because it's amazing.
So it's got different photos of different classic film gents that I swoon over, and it's velvet, and I...
it's kind of amazing looking. Did you...
It's amazing, and it's from a company in Hong Kong, and
wow.
It's very cheap, but it's very well made, so...
Scrambled eggs. Oh, I missed that.
So, yeah, it's I was very excited to have that. I made this one, and I also made one for opening night.
Oh, what was the opening one?
The opening night one had Rod Taylor and Steve McQueen and Cary Grant and Gary Cooper and John Garfield and yeah.
That's amazing. So
it was,
did you? So, not to go way off track, but did you, like, how did this get designed? Do they do it themselves?
I did it. Because
so this
sell,
is amazing. You should
sell.
Do this. You should do this.
No, because I can't sell this.
Copyright the images?
Yeah, I can't. I shouldn't even probably be doing this. But,
oh, stop.
It's they're all blank. Shoes, dresses, scar, like, everything. They have everything. And then you just plug in the photos, you know, that you want.
Because it is. It's amazing. It's very stylish looking.
Most people probably do fabric.
Right, right.
You're not crazy like I am, and, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, they're putting John Garfield on a dress.
Right. She was in it. So, of all the gents of this outfit in the last, like, who was your number one
gent?
Rod Taylor. Why Rod Taylor?
I don't know. He just seems like a really nice guy. And
I heard somebody tell a story the other night that supposedly Rod Taylor tells a story that he got in a fist fight with Jim Brown. And he claims to have won. Do you believe that?
I do believe it, yes.
You think he could beat up Jim Brown?
I think that Rod Taylor could kick ass. Yeah.
And then who's the second after Rod Taylor? Who would it be?
Cary Grant. Gary Cooper. Cary Grant.
Oh. CGGC.
1928, Gary Cooper. And then, like, 1940s, Cary Grant.
So Bachelor and Bobby socks are
great. Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
You didn't see that today.
No, but you can rub it in a little bit.
Do you, like, this is a nitrate screening. Is that, like, really important to you?
It is, because
why?
I just, you know what, this is a stupid reason to like it, but it's, I love the sound of it.
Really?
It's the old school.
Kind of like person who listens to vinyl or records and really likes
yes.
it?
Yes.
You get a, like a warmth from it?
It takes you back to, like, you know, when you used to have to see the circle flashing in the corner of the movie, you know, to have the reels changed, you know? It's just, it gives you an old school feel, and I love the sound of it, and I don't like to hear everything perfectly,
right.
So, you know, it's, you know, that's my favorite part.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
I spoke to Jeff Davis, who is, this was his second time at the festival. I'm connected to Jeff on Twitter and all that. And he just kind of talked about his experiences, comparing it first year experiences last year, and then bringing that knowledge of all the mistakes he made and everything into this next year, and the fact that most of the films he was seeing at this festival were first time views for him, which I thought was very impressive.
We are, Wade and I are in the lobby of the, no, Wade's walking off now, so it's just me in the lobby of the Roosevelt, and I am with pass holder Jeff Davis, and he is Parrothead34 on Twitter, and very active in the TCM party community on Twitter. And Jeff, how are you doing?
Doing great, thanks. How are you doing? You enjoying it?
Wonderful, wonderful. So how many festivals have you been to?
This is my second. Last year was the first, and made every rookie mistake you could possibly make. Showed up without enough advance notice, didn't really get acclimated to the West Coast. However, saw almost every film I wanted to see, and it was absolutely fantastic. But this is our second one.
That's wonderful. And so where are you from?
St. Louis, Missouri.
Great. And when did you fly into Los Angeles?
I got here on Tuesday morning.
And did you do anything else when you got here?
Let's see. We hit the Hollywood Museum. We walked around a lot. We actually did the test walk between venues to see how long it would really take to walk up to the new venue.
And how long? And this is the American Legion Theater, which is a new venue this year. And so, which I haven't been to yet, but I'm supposed to go tomorrow to go see Indiscreet. So how was that? Have you been to the venue yet? You just did the test walk, and how long did it take you?
It took about 12 minutes or so from the multiplex.
Okay.
Found the stairs and everything else.
So
figure I had another. Add another 2 minutes from here, so maybe 15 minutes. They're very serious when they say
So that's one thing for anyone who's thinking about going to the TCM Festival who hasn't been is if you don't know what, you know, a lot of it's self-explanatory, but there are little tricks that people who have come to this festival time and time again, they kind of know, like, for example, you would go into the back end of the multiplex instead of trying to enter from Hollywood Boulevard. Or if you're going down the Egyptian, sometimes you can go down a side road, go down the alleys, just because the creatures of the night who inhabit Hollywood Boulevard are impede our journey from theater to theater.
They do, no doubt, and they're quite serious when they say, you know, just go on your way, maintain your tunnel vision, and just try to block that all out. And to be honest, we get in each other's way sometimes also. I mean, when five or six movies are getting out at the same time, or four of them at the same time, and everyone's piling into the street, it can come, you know, rush hour on the New York subway.
Oh, yeah, totally. And so you said this is your second festival. Would you say that you're having a better experience this time because you know what to expect?
I think we are. And the fact that we actually, like I said, first time we made rookie mistakes, didn't give ourselves enough time, we're acclimated to the West Coast now. And we, you know, look at the schedule in advance, and we let ourselves actually rest more than we thought we would last year.
Yeah, that's so important. My first year was 2012, and I spent so much. I mean, I went to, like, I can't remember the count. It was like 21 or 22 screenings and events.
Wow.
And I didn't eat, and I didn't sleep, and I had a good time, but it wasn't pleasant, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
And so as the years have gone on, I've kind of changed my approach, and I might have, you know, two or three movies that I want to see, but I just kind of roll with it, and I find that I have a much better time.
Yeah, same here, especially, you know, last year. Maybe we realized about day two that we actually had to slow down a little bit and make sure that we actually ate a full meal at some point during the day.
Yeah.
Maybe just relax by the pool for a little bit.
Yep.
I mean, you can sacrifice a
Well, and honestly,
there.
Honestly, I don't remember a lot from that first year.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Wow.
And so I would rather, you know, have a few really good memorable experiences, because a lot of those memorable experiences are like this, like we're standing here and talking.
Absolutely.
You know,
or standing online talking to people you know on TCM Party and just catching up after so long.
Yeah, absolutely. So what have you seen so far?
So far, saw opening night with Harry Met Sally last night, but we bolted about 45 minutes early so we could run over to Bachelor and the Bobby Soxer.
How was that nitrate print?
It was absolutely amazing. Just amazing to look at on the big screen there. The Egyptian does such a great job as far as their projection. And
I heard it was kind of a sepia-toned.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little rough in a couple places, but, I mean, overall, though, I mean, purely 98 out of 100, without
doubt. Wonderful, wonderful. And what else are you looking forward to seeing this weekend?
Looking forward to seeing From Here to Eternity tomorrow, because I've never seen it.
Oh, that's a pretty heavy movie for 9 a.m.
For 9 a.m.
It's like
absolutely.
That one year I saw Inherit the Wind at 9 a.m., and I was like, Lord have mercy, what have I done?
Yep, and then Kind Hearts and Coronet's going to run too,
that's
and then Holiday on Sunday.
Oh, have you seen Holiday?
Never seen it.
Oh, actually, my goodness, you're in for a treat.
Believe it or not, and I was going through the schedule, every single film I see here except Harry Met Sally will be the first time I've seen the movie.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
It takes some kind of talent to avoid all these movies at once with as much TCM as I watch.
That's great. I love hearing that. Holiday, you are going to be... Everyone in that movie is so wonderful.
Yep.
It's just a joyful film.
Today was the first time he ever saw My Favorite Wife, and I was so excited for
him. Oh, it was your first time seeing that?
Was.
Okay, and what's your name?
My name is Tracy.
Tracy.
So it was his first time seeing it, and I was like, for being a Cary Grant fan, for being an Irene Dunne fan, for being a classic movie fan, this is a perfect movie to see. It was at the Egyptian. The print was beautiful. The experience was great because everybody in the movie theater had such a good time.
And
you know, you had a better time with each other. So
oh, absolutely.
He loved it.
And even better, Mario Cantone and Jennifer Grant introducing
that's
it.
That's wonderful. Yeah. See, and that's the thing is I usually do a mix of like movies I know very well and then new to me's. Because seeing a movie I know with an audience, with an appreciative audience, means so much.
Right. It was amazing.
Yeah, My Favorite Wife is a great movie, very funny. You know, he and Irene Dunne made three films together. They did The Awful Truth, and they did My Favorite Wife, and then they did Penny Serenade.
Which rip
your heart out. And you know, when you see it, you're like, oh, they're gonna do another comedy together, and it's not a comedy. No. When Filmstruck was still up and running, I did an on-camera introduction for My Favorite Wife, and so that was a lot of fun to talk about that film and the chemistry that he and Irene had together. So I'm so glad that you saw that. It's such a great movie.
It was fantastic.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Jeff.
Thank you, Jill. This was fun, and finally great meeting you after knowing you for so long.
I know.
We talked about so much. I mean, our little community here is not that little, but we all have one thing in common, and we're almost the same kind of people, believe it or not. I mean, we're just quiet and shy in real life. Unless we get around the people that we are with here, and suddenly we're the most outgoing introverts you'll ever meet.
Right? How many places are you going to go where, like, you're standing in line and you know, you can talk about, like, random character actors everyone around... I mean, the fact that you go to a movie and people start clapping when Franklin Pangborn comes on the screen.
Right.
I mean, we're all weirdos. And nerds.
In the best way possible.
In the best way possible.
Absolutely.
And so it's such a loving environment. And I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you're having a great time.
It was great finally meeting you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Angela's a good friend of mine. And Sean and I were standing in line with her at the Raiders of the Lost Ark screening. And she sat with us. And I talked to her in line. And then I guess you talked to her, too, in line for Butch. And she got some great airtime.
I am standing outside the TCL Chinese Theater online for Raiders of the Lost Ark. We're going to have a presentation before by Craig Barron and Ben Burt, always my can't miss. And I am standing here with the awesome Angela Pettis, who is also going to attend this film. So how's your festival so far?
Oh, it's been amazing. Literally from the time I got in till now, it's just been nonstop awesomeness.
That's great. And how many festivals have you been to?
This is my sixth year.
Sixth year. And what was your first year?
2014.
Okay, that was a good year.
Oh, yeah, Robert Osborne's last year.
That's right, Robert Osborne's last year. It was also the year I was bit by a poodle.
I remember that, yes.
That would have been probably the first time you met me.
Yep.
And I had this, like, herpy-looking thing on my lip.
I remember that, yeah.
I didn't want to make this about me, but I just... I needed to put this in the timeline of crazy shit that's happened to me.
Only in Hollywood.
Okay, so what have you seen so far?
I did High Society this morning over at the Legion Theater, which it was my first time there, and it's an absolutely beautiful theater.
Okay, great that was sound. My follow-up was, how was the theater? Okay.
Loved it. Okay. Great sound.
Okay, great. And then did you see anything last night on the opening night?
I watched the red carpet arrivals from the bleachers and then got some dinner and did The Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
Okay, and we were at that too, and it was my first time seeing it. Had you seen it before?
Yeah, I actually saw it in an intro level French class I took in college. One of those things my teacher said, it was kind of like what The Wizard of Oz is to Americans. It's just one of those movies in France everybody knows.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what else are you seeing today?
After this, I think we're going to do Day for Night. I'm definitely doing the midnight movie, but in between there, there's a huge toss-up block between Roadhouse, Do the Right Thing, and Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
Well, you can't go wrong with any of those.
No.
And so, out of all of the screenings this weekend, what's the one can't miss?
It's a tie between A Woman of Affairs and the Dolly Sisters. And I'm so happy that they're back-to-back at the Egyptian this year, so no conflicts.
And the Dolly Sisters is a nitrate, correct?
Yep.
Very cool. So we're standing in line for Raiders of the Lost Ark. Have you seen this on the big screen before?
A few years ago, yeah.
Okay. And have you ever seen Craig Barron and Ben Burtt give a presentation at the festival?
Shamefully, no, but I've heard they're amazing, and I always wanted to come, but for one reason or another, it just never panned out. So I'm hopefully going to make it to both this and Tarzan this year.
Well, you will really enjoy it. They do kind of a PowerPoint presentation type thing, which sounds really boring, but it's really, really great, and it's perfect for movie nerds. But I even say that even people who aren't big movie nerds love these presentations, so you're really in for a treat.
I'm so looking forward to it.
And what's your favorite scene in Raiders?
You know, honestly, I think it's the intro with the whole being chased by the boulder. And God, what a great opening.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I just like anything where Indy uses that whip, you know what
oh,
I mean? You
yes. go with him.
Yeah. Yeah, that whip is hot, right?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much, Angela.
No problem.
Every year, people make up buttons, and this year, Jill, you had a button. And
I did.
It was fun to see everybody sporting it. In fact, Karen only got to go to one day of the festival, but I gave her for the day the Frederick button because she was so excited about it, so she wore it that
the
day.
The button thing, I don't really know when that started. Because it didn't seem to be like they would have maybe a button for sale in the little festival shop, which used to be in the Roosevelt. It was just like a teensy little thing.
And these are, just to explain, these are buttons that people make on their own and bring with them. And it sometimes represents their website or their personal passion. Explain yours. What did yours say?
So I wanted, you know, I like to do something every year, and yeah, I wasn't quite sure what to do. And my husband said, well, why don't you do like a name tag, like a hello, my name is Frederick. So I designed this little rectangular button that says, hello, my name is Frederick. And the font I used looked like a marker, like you're going to like some corporate thing where you have to break out into small groups. And I made that, and it was like, you know, just something stupid. And then people always ask you, but why? And it also was kind of like a little PSA for, this is how you spell his name.
Because it's spelled differently.
Because it's spelled, his stage name was spelled differently because he just wanted to be difficult.
Right.
That was fun.
Yeah. I think it was a good year. It was a fun year. Looking forward to what next year brings.
And there will be a next year. I mean, you know,
every year I think they're nervous. Is there going to be another festival?
Yeah, you know, and
because the cruises went away for a little bit.
They did go away. I didn't have any reason to believe there wouldn't be another festival. I think there's just this general unease with the Warner Media acquisition, formation, whatever you want to call this. And there's a lot of, I think there's a lot up in the air. But kind of the whispers and murmurs are that it's going to be okay for now. And they announced on the Sunday night when we were at all the last screenings, but Wade and my friend Sean and I went to go see The Godfather Part 2, which, I mean, God, what a way to end that festival. Like, seriously. And Ben Mankiewicz introduced it, and he told us that there would be an 11th festival next year, which we are very happy about. So we'll probably have us another episode next month, right? Yeah. And talking about something that is not
other than TCM Fest.
Yeah, I promise you people that this is not where we're headed all the time.
Yeah,
this is just kind
true.
Of our big just
big, you know, to do of the year.
Well, and this is, you know, this is festival season across the board anyways, and but this is kind of our big deal. So
yeah.
it deserved two podcasts, two episodes.
So until next time, this is Jill Blake and Wade Sheila reminding you to watch a classic film and imbibe responsibly. Drinking While Talking is available through Apple Podcasts, as well as the 25th Frame, a listener-supported network celebrating film and culture worldwide. And check out all their programming at 25thframemedia.com. Our theme music is by Robert Kincaid.